Chapter 27 Beasts of Ruin. There was something both frightening and calming about fire. Perhaps because it was indiscriminatory in what and who it consumed. From her place on the North Garden's lawns, Kofi watched as the bonfire's flames leaped higher and higher. Around her, the Dirajas under Zane's illusion were still screaming. And from somewhere even farther than that, Kofi could hear the rough snorts of the Ichisonga, the moans as it ran away with Fedu into the darkness. She heard Ekon shout, an order to run, but she couldn't move. She found herself transfixed as the red-orange flames began to spread past the boundaries of the bonfire in which they'd been contained. The acrid smell of smoke filled the air, burning her lungs and reminding her of another time, in the Night Zoo. There'd been a fire there too, screams like the ones she was hearing now. Kofi! Kofi started as someone called her name, grabbed her arm. She braced herself, but relaxed when she saw it was Amon next to her. He was as beautiful as ever, but there was terror etched in every detail of his face. We have to go! He shouted over the noise around them. Now! Zane can't hold the Dirajas loyal to Fedu for much longer. Zane. The name brought Kofi back into focus. She looked to her right and saw that he was standing in the exact place he'd been before. Kofi realized now that in all of their practice sessions together, she'd always been the one he'd been creating illusions and delusions for. She'd never actually seen what he looked like when he was using the splendor himself. Zane's face was the picture of calm. He could have been sleeping. Still, when Kofi looked closer, she saw it. Zane's jaw was trembling, and a sheen of sweat glistened on his brow. None of the muscles in his body were tensed, but he looked as though he was under enormous strain. Kofi looked around them. There were at least 20 Dirajas on the ground, still under his influence. He'd explained before that keeping even one person in an illusion was exhausting. She didn't want to know what doing this might cost him. We have to get out of here, said Amon, looking from Zane to her. Najiri's gathering the Dirajas who want to leave. Do you have a plan? A plan. The word jarred something in Kofi's mind. A plan. Yes, she had a plan. She glanced over her shoulder one more time, then shouted, This way! She didn't wait to see if Amon was following before she tore in the direction of Thornkeep's stables. In her periphery, she saw Ekon and McKenna running to fall into stride with her. And behind her, she heard more footsteps that she hoped belonged to Amon or Najiri. The stables loomed as she drew nearer to them. Even at a distance, she could hear the panicked cries and bleats of its inhabitants. The animal's collective sound was a stab between her ribs. She stopped before the stable's doors and turned. Ekon, McKenna, and Amon were with her, but no one else. Her heart sank, but she stood straighter when she spoke. I don't have the strength or confidence to get everyone through the Mistwood on foot right now, she said. So our next best bet is to take the Kongamatos. The reactions she got were exactly what she'd expected. Amon nodded, grave, while McKenna stared at her in horror. Ekon looked confused. Is anyone going to tell me what a Congo... Kofi is not safe, McKenna cut in. Thornkeep's Kongamatos aren't trained. Who's to say they'll even know what they're doing, where to go? They'll know if I take the lead, said Amon. He didn't look happy about this plan, but there was a resolution in his expression. I can ride Mjane. She's oldest and they respect her. Coupled with my affinity, I think I could persuade them to follow her through the Mistwood. We have to try, said Kofi. She looked off into Thornkeep's grounds. The fire still raged near the bonfire. But the other gardens were still dark, shadowed. And we need to leave quickly. Right, said Amon. I'll get the Kongamatos ready. He disappeared into the stables without another word. Find Najiri and any other Dirajas who want to leave, said Kofi to McKenna. The girl nodded and headed toward Thornkeep, leaving Kofi and Ekon alone. In their silence, the distant bonfire's roar was a soft crackle. Kofi turned to Ekon and found that he was smiling at her. What? You've changed, said Ekon. You're more confident now. Kofi considered that idea. She hadn't necessarily felt different from before, but it occurred to her that maybe she had changed. The last time she'd seen Ekon, she'd known so little about being a Duraja, about her affinity to the splendor. She hadn't been at all comfortable with the idea of leading anyone else. But maybe that was the point. Maybe no one ever felt truly ready to lead. Maybe it was something that one just had to do. In spite of everything, she met Ekon's gaze and held it. Thank you, Ekon. You're welcome, Kofi. A sudden bang made them both jump. Amon was coming through the stables with one of the Kongamatos on a lead. Kofi hadn't seen this one the first time she'd come to the stables. It was colored a deep blue like the sea, and its scales sparkled alternately in the distant firelight and the moonlight above. Beside her, she heard a gasp. That's a Kongamato? Ekon was staring up at the creature in horror. More specifically, this is Wingu, said Amon, smiling. He's not as old and mature as Mjane, but he's big, so he'll be able to carry several people without any trouble. Kofi looked over her shoulder. Across the North Garden lawns, there were two different groups of people running toward the stables, and she recognized both. Najiri was sprinting with Durajas in her wake, a group of about 12 from the looks of it. Slightly to the left, McKenna was running too, but more slowly, as she helped hold someone upright. Zane. He must have lifted his illusions on the Durajas loyal to Fedu, which meant, go! Their time was finite now. Kofi didn't want to be around when those Durajas, who'd been under Zane's influence, finally came too and understood what was happening. We need to go now! Amon dashed back into the stables at the same time Najiri and the others reached them. Kofi's eyes roamed over the faces of the Durajas she'd brought with her. They looked terrified. Come on! She led them into the stables. We don't have a lot of time! Her feet seemed to carry her of their own accord through the winding hallways and stalls until they reached its rear and the Kongamato paddock. She slid the doors open and heard a collective gasp. Everyone follow Amon's instruction and pick a Kongamato, she ordered. We'll be following him to get out of Thornkeep. There was a pause in which no one seemed able to move, and then Najiri began ushering Durajas forward. Kofi watched, counting to herself, as Amon allocated Durajas to different Kongamatos based on their size and weight. There were more than enough Kongamatos here to get them out. Relief flooded her. Kofi! She turned and saw McKenna and Zane limping through the stable's doors, too. McKenna was out of breath, and Zane's eyes were barely open. He overdid it, McKenna explained, holding off all the Durajas. Ride with him, said Kofi, trying to temper the fleeting pain in her chest at the sight of Zane that way. She watched as Amon directed them toward an older-looking Kongamato, trying to stay calm. What about you? Kofi looked up and saw Ekon still standing by the stable's doors. He looked wary. You're going to ride with me, she said. Over here, Kofi! Amon was waving her down now. Together, Kofi and Ekon made their way across the paddock. Most of the Durajas had boarded their Kongamatos now, and Kofi's eyes widened as they fell upon the one Amon was standing beside now. Its scales were a golden yellow, its eyes the color of amber. Even under the night sky, it looked brilliant. This is Njano, he said. She's younger but fast, and she likes to fly. Kofi stood before the Kongamato, awed. She's beautiful. She's huge, Ekon whispered. I'm going to get him, Njane, Amon continued. We're ready when you are. Kofi watched him go before turning to Ekon. He was still eyeing Njano. I'm ready, she whispered. Are you? Ekon's eyes were still trained on the Kongamato. As ready as I'll ever be. It would have to be enough. Kofi approached Njano slowly, her head bowed. The creature regarded her with a look Kofi almost would have called amusement in other circumstances, before lowering to the ground. Even on her belly, her back came up to Kofi's chest. Come on. Where exactly did these things come from? Ekon asked as he helped Kofi up, then pushed himself onto Njano's back. We'll have to talk about that later. Kofi cast one more look around the paddock at the other Dorajas. Every one of them was looking at her, waiting, and she felt like she should say something, but she didn't know what. Something inspiring, a voice in her mind encouraged. Something motivating. Once we head into the Mistwood, there's no turning back, she said aloud. Stay together, no matter what. They weren't the words she planned to say. She wasn't even sure if they were the right ones, but they were the only ones she had. She took one last steadying breath before she leaned in and breathed the command, loud enough only for Njano to hear. Kapunda. A shriek erupted from the Kangamato's body. There was a sharp lurch, and then the world around her blurred as they were catapulted into the air. There was a sharpness in the wind as it lashed against her skin and tore through her hair, but she relished it as Njano soared higher and higher. She stole one final glance over her shoulder, watching Thornkeep grow small. From here, she could no longer see the golden-lit windows or the garden's trees and flowers. The farther away from the grounds she got, the more alive she felt. A small smile touched her lips. Home. We're going home. Ekon's arms tightened around her as Njano dipped, and Kofi tried to remember the way Zane had moved when he'd taken her on her first ride. It was simple enough. She just had to lean slightly in the direction she wanted to go in, or lean forward to pick up speed. She was still getting used to the feel of the commands when something whooshed past her in a large blur of black. Njane. Amun was on her back. He turned the Kangamato in mid-air so that they were facing her. If you create the path, I'll lead, he said. Kofi nodded, then closed her eyes. It was much harder to focus, to block out what was happening around her, but when she reached for the splendor, it answered. She felt it move through her body, forming fragments of light around her hands. Home, she commanded it. Show me the way home. She no longer wondered if the splendor would obey her. She knew now that it would. In a surge, the bits of light multiplied to form lines in the sky. Behind her, she heard Ekon gasp. But Kofi focused on that light. It passed Amun and Njane and disappeared into the clouds. Follow the light, Kofi shouted, and Amun nodded. She watched as other Dorajas on their Kangamatos passed her in flurries of colors, one by one. She waited until she was at the back of the group to move forward again. The breath left her body as she leaned forward, and Njano shrieked again, tearing into the night sky. It took me hours on foot to walk through the Mistwood, Ekon shouted behind her. At this speed, we'll be through in a couple of minutes. Kofi heard him distantly, but focused on the light. Several yards ahead, Amun was still following it, so she had to keep the splendor's path bright. Past him, she could see the mist beginning to thin, the stars of a different night's sky twinkling in the distance. Kofi, said Ekon, we're almost there. Kofi could see it now. The mist was lifting. Cheers went up from the Dorajas all around her as they saw it. Freedom, hope, home. Up ahead, she watched as Amun began to guide Njane down. We're going to land, she said to Ekon, and now Kofi leaned forward. It was all too easy to remember what had happened the last time she'd descended on a Kangamato with Zane, but this time she was ready. She braced herself, tightening her knees' grip on either side of Njano, as the Kangamato's body plummeted sharply. She heard Ekon yelp, but Kofi kept her gaze trained on the ground, focused. Already she could see grass, not the manicured green of Thornkeep's lawn, but a wilder yellow kind. She braced herself, closing her eyes and preparing for the impact in those last few seconds. But when Njano landed, she felt only a gentle thud. And then, like that, it was over. We made it! Ekon jumped off Njano and whooped, punching the air. We made it! Around her, Kofi heard other Dorajas cheering as she watched the last glimmers of the splendor path flickering out. She cast her eyes and saw that the mist was now behind them. They were standing in an open plain that stretched for miles in every direction. "Where are we?" she asked. "The Cusini region in the south," said Akon. "By wagon, Lycosa is a few weeks' journey north." Lycosa. Even hearing the city's name made something in Kofi's heart thrum. Lycosa. Home. She could go home. "Hey!" One of the Jirajas was pointing to something in the distance, and Kofi tensed. It was difficult to make out, but she could just barely discern what looked to be the wagons of a caravan coming her way. "We need to leave," she said quickly. "Everyone, back on the Kangamados." "Wait." Ekon held up a hand, squinting. He looked to be in disbelief. "Hold on. I think I know that caravan. They're friends." Friends. Kofi relished that word. They'd need all the friends they could find now, to get home, to figure out how to remove the splendor from her body. She was watching the caravan draw closer when she heard a scream. She whirled, and her blood went cold. A figure was coming out of the mist behind them, slow and deliberate. She recognized its frame, the confident way it walked forward. But nothing prepared her to see Fedu as he emerged from the wisps of white like a ghost. His clothes were torn and bloodied, and his eyes were wild. "Hello, Kofi," he said with a manic grin. Kofi didn't see the other Jirajas retreat, but she felt their abandonment, heard their footsteps as they moved away. A fear like she'd never felt before shuddered up her body as she took the god in. There was a horrid gaping hole in the middle of his chest, so large she could see straight through it. He followed her gaze, and his smile lengthened. "A grievous injury," he said, indicating toward it. "But it will take more than that to kill me. Far more. I will heal in a matter of time. And when I do, I will resume my work, whether you comply willingly or not." "Kofi." Next to her, Kofi heard Ekon whisper her name. "Ekon." He'd been the only one to stay beside her when Fedu appeared. Her eyes cut to him, and she saw he was staring at the god, his expression stricken. "I want you to run. I'll try to hold him off." Fedu's eyes flitted to Ekon, as though for the first time he'd noticed him there.
"Ah, Ekon Akojo."
There was almost an affection in his voice.
"It seems I misjudged you. I didn't think you capable of what you just did. I admit, I'm impressed."
"Run," Ekon said through his teeth. "It's you he wants. You need to get out of here."
"Yes, Kofi."
Fedu's eyes danced, eerily bright in the starlight.
"Run. Run, and I will catch you, like I caught Adia, like I caught the rest of my Jirajas. You will spend the rest of your life on the run."
It was true. Kofi knew it. Ekon would try to protect her, and maybe she could escape Fedu tonight. But he would always chase her. She'd spend the rest of her life running. He would terrorize her, ensure that she always lived in fear. She met the god of death's eyes, and he smiled as though he knew what she was thinking. A sudden white-hot anger erupted in her chest at that. He found this, all of this, amusing. Her fingernails dug deep into the meat of her palms as a renewed anger rose within her like an evening tide. She felt the splendor in her body growing, swelling, and imagined the things she could do with it. It boiled her blood, drew sweat to her brow, made her overwarm all over. She felt like a breathing inferno, a living tempest. And in that moment, as new power surged through her and crashed against her bones, she knew what she could do, what she wanted to do. Distantly, she thought of what Amon had once told her about Kangamados. He'd called them beasts of ruin, creatures of war that could only destroy. Very well, then.
Perhaps that was what she would become. She opened one of her hands and imagined what she wanted. The splendor poured from her, forming and fusing, until she held a spear in her hand, entirely cast in golden light. Its energy hummed when she lifted it. Destroy, a new voice within her urged as the splendor in her body grew. Destroy him. Exquisite, said Fedu tenderly. His eyes, still focused on Kofi, were bright with elation. Absolutely exquisite. The wonder in his voice made Kofi even angrier. She let loose the spear with perfect aim, watching with satisfaction as it struck him in his middle and split like so many bolts of lightning. Fedu screamed, and Kofi smiled. Destroy, that new voice said again. Destroy him. She summoned more of the splendor from her body now, more than she'd ever summoned before. A longer spear formed in her hand, and she threw it toward the god with relish. This time, it skewered his thigh, and Fedu howled in pain as he fell. He started to pull himself on his elbows toward the mistwood. He says he is immortal, whispered the strange voice. Let us put that to the test. Fedu was nearly obscured now, still backing into the mistwood's shelter. Kofi opened her hand again, feeling the heat of a third spear as it warmed her skin. This one, this will do it. This will kill him. Fedu was no longer visible. He'd disappeared into the mist. But Kofi found she didn't care anymore. She felt, for the first time, truly powerful. Destroy. The strange voice was no longer singular, but a gleeful chorus. Destroy, destroy, destroy it all. Kofi! Another voice, a familiar voice, silenced the chorus instantly. Kofi blinked, feeling the splendor recede from her as quickly as it had come, as she turned in that voice's direction. She found that Ekon was staring at her, but she didn't recognize the expression on his face. He looked shocked, terrified. Come back, he said quietly. Come back. Come back. Kofi heard the words, but they sounded faint. She felt the splendor that had torn through her body continue to fade, but with it, so did something else. A dull roaring filled her ears, a sound that made it impossible to hear the rest of the words forming on Ekon's lips. Her knees trembled as she tried to step forward, and she felt herself falling. In the distance, she thought she heard someone shout, but she couldn't be sure. From the ground, she stared up at the stars above, 1,000 tiny diamonds speckled across a black blanket of night. She watched them until the world darkened, until she felt nothing at all.